Hey, good morning, everyone. Dave Weiner here. It is Sunday, May 8th, 2016, and I just wrote a blog post about how our political system is doing. And what's funny about our situation, is if anything could be seen as funny, not funny in a ha-ha way, funny in a weird way, is that we're at sort of the confluence of technology and politics at this point. Everything just sort of has come together into one thing, that politics and technology are the same thing. And this has been a constant theme of mine going back to the very beginning of my blog in 1994. It was the epiphany that I wrote a blog post called Bill Gates versus the Internet, and I said that the technology world was about to go off in a completely different direction from where it had been going. And it was sort of the Bernie Sanders moment of technology in a way, or before that, the Obama moment or the Howard Dean moment, because if you look at that continuum, in a way, if you go back to that Bill Gates versus the Internet, it's on that continuum of Howard Dean and Obama and Bernie Sanders, because it was a sort of a very steady advance from technology and networks to how our society makes decisions and how we share information with each other and ideas. Along the way, there were ideas like sources go direct. I mean, very fundamental change in the topology of our communication system. It was if you were to draw a graph, and thanks to Mark Zuckerberg, the idea of a graph is now a popular concept. But programmers think in terms of graphs, even if they're not aware of that terminology. It's what we work with. Linked lists are graphs, trees are graphs, and then there's the general graph where any node can be connected with any other node. That's the internet. The internet is that general graph at a physical technology layer and at every layer above that. It's just a bunch of layers, and each layer transfers that basic ability of this linking, connecting of different nodes with each other. Anyway, so you start with Bill Gates versus the internet. It was the realization that the technology industry, it was sort of like what Bernie Sanders talks about, not a new idea, by the way, the establishment versus whatever isn't the establishment. We had an establishment in technology in 1994, and it had replaced in a previously existing establishment. There had been the mainframe computer era, followed by the mini computer era, followed by the microcomputer era, and then all hell breaks loose. Fundamental change. But each level represented a fundamental change from the one before it, and more on the continuum that led us to Bernie Sanders, and by the way, Donald Trump. Donald Trump, like it or not, it isn't that he is speaking for the people. It's just that he's learned to use the technology. And I'm not sure that Bernie Sanders, I don't see any indication, he never really talks about it. You don't see his personality on Twitter very much. It could very well be that Bernie Sanders does not appreciate this. I realized the other day, even though at the time I was sure it wasn't this way, that Obama might not have been aware of what he had tapped into. Maybe Obama only ever realized that he had discovered a way to get elected, not necessarily a new way for politics to work. It's possible. There are indications that he does. I mean, I cleaned out my mailbox recently, my Obama mailbox, and this has been part of my Gmail structure ever since I started donating money to Obama in the 2008 election, and again in the 2012 election, I donated money. So I have been getting emails from Obama, but routed to a mailbox which I never open. Why do I never open it? Because all they want from me is money. Same way public radio, all they ever wanted from me was money. They didn't want my ideas. They didn't want me to use their network to organize, to find new, to make new contacts, to create new connections, to be a network. These weren't networked things, you know. NPR, you know, I've had arguments with friends of mine who I fundamentally agree with on most things in journalism, but this is one where we part ways. And this is why the New York Times is perennially in trouble, because they did not create a network. That was their challenge. That was their job. It was sort of like you had one job to do and you didn't do it very well. They've always been very good at the sort of ethics of reporting. And although their reporters, by the way, often feel like they have a lot more power than they should feel. This gatekeeper thing, it really infects the New York Times. And I've seen it destroy people, both in terms of their arrogance takes over. They can't hear things anymore because, well, I work at the New York Times. I'm only going to hear what important people say to me. And if you're not an important person, I'm not going to hear what you have to say. They miss whole things, whole trends. Big, huge markets develop. They never write about them. They never catch up with them. They never understand the significance of them. Just yesterday, they had an article about podcasting. It was the most naive thing you've ever seen. It was the wrongest thing you've ever seen about what is podcasting? What does it represent? What they don't get, okay, what is built into their system is they don't get the networking side of it. They don't get the fact that this isn't anymore about, I mean, if Bernie Sanders were sitting right here, I would ask Bernie Sanders, tell me what you mean by the establishment. And I would say, look, there's no mics on here. You're not talking to any reporters. This is just me, Dave, and Bernie, okay? Tell me what you think a network, what, oh, sorry. Did I say it? Because I'm pretty sure that Bernie Sanders sees the internet as another way to raise money, just like all the rest of them, just like the New York Times sees it's another way to distribute news. Not that it's really impacting the way they create news, even though it actually is. If they were to stop and think about it, you know, that's what. So when the podcasting reporter at the New York Times, John Herman is his name, writes the story about what's wrong with podcasting, he goes and talks to a bunch of corporate podcasters, as if there was such a thing. Just like there aren't any corporate bloggers. I mean, you know, they aren't bloggers. I mean, the people who are corporate podcasters are, and it's NPR using a different mechanism for distribution, that's all. So everything they want are the things that you need to have a 20th century media business. Well, we're not in the 20th century anymore, and it's about networking. It's not about putting advertising. You can go ahead and put advertising on it if you want. It's just going to distract from the networking power. Yeah, you may put your product at a disadvantage. You know, it's sad, actually, in the way that, well, because it's all over the place. All the clues were there in 1994. You know, why I saw it earlier, I'll tell you why. I'm mimicking Bernie Sanders. I'll tell you why. Because basically what had happened was my life had completely emptied out in 1994 and I had nothing to do. I knew where, I believed strongly where the technology I'd been working on was going. I just, you know, it was just, it wasn't receptive to me. I couldn't participate in it because things had gotten so clogged up with venture capital money and huge companies and all their deals and the complicated APIs and lack of distribution and these huge numbers of employees they hire whose job it is to whatever. I don't think they know what they're supposed to do. They create some of the worst software ever, yet the press says, well, this is the people who create the software. Who will write about it? Anyway, it's all been about networking. So now we're okay. What happened is now, so we've got Twitter sitting out there. Twitter is a very good network for building a Donald Trump-style campaign, right? And the problem is that you can't do anything about that. He's basically got that channel. Can we quickly develop more channels to communicate with people in more powerful ways that are more resistant to trolls and to, you know, to the fact that we have to funnel all of our messages through, four cable news networks who who are very, 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 very confused about what their role is now, and are genuinely confused. It's no longer a matter of they're confident that they feel that they understand how things work. They no longer are confident in that. They have had the legs knocked out from under them, and this is a good thing, actually, because it's now time to change. We can actually, you want change? This is a really good time for it, okay? Because everybody's attention is focused on this election, and it is one of the scariest, it's the most scary election I think the United States has ever had. I don't know about all the elections before I was born. I know what I read about them, and maybe that's not, probably not true, because I would be willing to bet there were some elections leading up to the Civil War that were pretty scary. Well, there were a lot of wars, actually, up to that point. There was the War of 1812, there was the Spanish-American War, of course, there was the Revolutionary War. These were existential wars that the United States was involved in. We're headed towards one of those right now. We are in the midst of something that kind of looks like a civil war, unless we can sort of find a way to get control over ourselves. And this is really what we need to do. The problem is that a lot of people believe the shit that they've been told. It's not true. It's not true that ISIS has penetrated the American society, that there are people that are protesting at Donald Trump rallies that are from ISIS. But people believe that they are. You actually heard it come out. Remember the guy who got arrested for attacking a protester at a Trump rally just before the whole mess in Chicago? He was interviewed after that, and he said, I thought this guy was from ISIS. And I thought, wow, how did that idea enter his head? Then I started listening to what they say on Fox News and realized that one could very easily interpret what they're saying that way, that he seemed to truly believe it. He didn't seem like necessarily all that bad a person. I think he believed that things were very dire and that ISIS is about to do, has already done some terrible damage to the United States and is about to do a lot more. When in reality, ISIS dreams of doing terrible things to the United States, but so far hasn't really managed to do it. They've managed to upset us and scare us and offend us, that's for sure. They're really good, like Trump is, at using the media to inflict fear. Which brings me around to, well, okay, so like the really big idea is that we really do need to get our shit together between technology people and political people, and we need to start working quickly on building new networks. We've been stagnating here, and we let this thing happen. You know, Trump entered, as a friend of mine, Doug Purdy, said, he entered the zeroth ring in our security system. He got all the way to the kernel level. And he's about to, like, really completely, you know, take over the system. You know, he's like a fucking hacker. If you've ever had to fight hackers, I mean, I don't claim to have, I'm not world class. I've had to fight them, but, I'm not running a big server, so, you know. But I thought that was a very apt analogy. So what we need to do is build some new communication systems, for crying out loud. I mean, Twitter has been very incrementally evolving now since 2006, and they've been the leading edge. I mean, Facebook is, for whatever, it's basically used for not the things that Twitter is used for. And while Trump has a presence on Facebook, it's nowhere near the level it is on Twitter. So, you know, if Twitter wants to make some big changes now, wouldn't be a terrible time to do it, or to open up and let other people develop on top of their infrastructure new sort of social graph structures that might allow us to organize in new ways that our hacker does not recognize. We have technology smarts that he does not have, but so far we can't really use them because you guys, the journalists, believe that all the answers come from the big companies. And as recently as yesterday's podcasting article, y'all still seem to think that Steve Jobs gifted podcasting to the world. And Steve Jobs did not. It would never happen. Steve Jobs just simply wasn't the kind of person who would ever think of creating networks for his users. His idea was, if you ever want to get an idea for how Steve Jobs thought, Doc Searls wrote a piece in 1997 when Steve Jobs came back to Apple about Steve Jobs and our role in Steve Jobs' universe. It was just beautiful. He says basically our job was to admire him. And what Doc says was his shit was basically very admirable. So that's why it worked. I mean, but he was not a democracy guy. He did not believe in the people. He did not ever create tools that where the average person was intended to be a creative force. He would never. I would love to hear, if Steve Jobs were alive today, I'd love to hear what he thinks about Donald Trump, because it would fucking blow his mind. I think he never would have anticipated something like this. You know, he was the most establishment guy you know. Okay? So when you come to the conclusion that Steve Jobs gifted us podcasting and therefore the answer for the future of all these companies that start up in podcasting is going to come from Apple, you are off in a cul-de-sac. You are way in the weeds. You're not even remotely on the fairway. Your shot isn't going to go in. You just simply don't get it. The whole point is networking stuff. And so we desperately need that. What we need right now, I would say this to, if Joe Trippi were sitting here with me. Joe was the guy who, at the Dean campaign, I'm not sure what role he played exactly, but he clearly understands how these networked systems work. And Joe was the, you know, I don't know what the exact title. If it were a TV show, he would be the showrunner of the Dean campaign. Although I'm sure Dean did it. Dean was the Walter White of the campaign. He was the star. And then there was this network. And I hung out there at the Dean headquarters in Burlington for a couple of days at a very peak period. Really at the point when the campaign melted down was when I chose to be there, which was actually really incredible timing. But that it's really time to rev that whole thing up in high gear without waiting for permission from anybody to do it. It's really time to do it, you know? Otherwise, we could wake up in whatever day election day is in November and find out that the bully pulpit that Donald Trump now... I mean, the crazy thing is he has half of a bully pulpit right now. We actually have to listen to what he says. You can't dismiss it as the ramblings of some insane person who we will be able to forget about next week, because that won't happen. You know, we hope we will be able to forget about him as of November, the same way we've been able to forget about Mitt Romney and John McCain and Sarah Palin and all the rest of those people that we've been able to forget about. But the nightmare is that we will be forgetting about our country and what we stand for. It's just really hard to think about. So we're at the moment where the we're going to have cliffhanger after cliffhanger till the final. Maybe it won't be. Hopefully, it won't be such a cliffhanger come November. Hopefully, we will know the outcome well in advance, and we will have dodged the bullet. And the Republicans will have come to their senses and realized that we can't lie to people about so wildly about what's going on and expect somehow that we're going to get away with it for the long term, because eventually, as somebody said in the 2008 campaign, the chickens have come home to roost. Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, that's where we're at right now. Anyway, I've talked long enough. Lots of interesting ideas out there. Really good time for change. Really good time to make a difference. Let's hope we get our shit together and we don't like fall down this hole into the darkness of the Trumpocracy. It's bad enough we have to deal with the Trumpocalypse. Okay, everybody. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.